Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
Back for a Not a Thing podcast. We're mostly on schedule this week.
We are directly on schedule, day-wise.
We're never late nor early. We're always precisely on time.
Because it's a free podcast and deal with it.
It's this is good. Is this 78? 79?
Something like that. We're in the high 70s.
Something like that. We're getting there. We're gonna start planning that 100 show pretty soon.
We've got some time.
I guess we do have like 20 weeks.
Yeah, I think if we start planning it now, we're gonna get too into it.
I guess it's like almost 5 months from now.
So, yeah, we don't want to start. It's like releasing the teaser trailer a year before the movie comes out.
Yeah.
You're just going to get people excited for nothing.
Oh, what movie was that?
Every movie now, it seems. Interstellar?
Oh, which one is that?
That's the new Christopher Nolan movie that they already put out a teaser trailer for a little while ago, for a while.
I haven't seen the teaser for it yet.
It doesn't. I don't think it. I think it maybe has like one shot of actual footage of the movie, and the rest is all.
Oh yes, it's the
that
one.
New style of trailer where it's not showing the movie; it's building. Yeah, yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's all footage of like
exploration.
Right, and then it ends with like a shuttle launch looking kind of thing.
Yeah, like Matthew McConaughey driving a truck.
Right. Okay, well.
Which he's making that after he's made, had his amazing year of acting this year. So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Because when I first heard that he was starring in it, I was like, oh, no. But now he's got some solid projects under his belt this year. So.
Cool.
Faith restored.
Well, I know that one of the big companies that has a huge undertaking pulling together is really just, I guess, apparently NBC with the Olympics. I mean, the Olympics themselves were a huge undertaking, which, is kind of going with mixed results, if you believe any of all the news that's associated with it. But some news came out about NBC, which is the at least in the States, the exclusive provider of any kind of footage. And one of the things they're doing is kind of quietly subverting the sponsorship kind of setup. So I guess McDonald's is a sponsor of the Olympics, and they're pretty big, and so they are the, like, I don't know if it's exclusive provider of food.
Is the official branded coffee of the Olympics.
Oh, wow. There was a...
Which is amazing. They've come a long way since hot coffee in the early 90s.
Well, I know that the McCafe kind of stuff went along better in Europe than it did in the U.S. I mean, I feel like in the U.S. it's kind of a, oh yeah, that you can get coffee here, and it's now like espresso based. So, but anyway, the kind of big deal secret that came out is that NBC apparently is running essentially a Starbucks in their compound, and it's. It's not officially Starbucks because you can't have another like coffee shop there because of the McDonald's kind of thing. But, they're serving everything in Starbucks cups, and B, all of the workers that are providing the coffee for the NBC people are former Starbucks employees.
Or they are active Starbucks employees.
Oh, they're current.
Yeah, they work in other Starbucks in Russia, and they're getting, like, bussed in for work.
Well, apparently the number of people that are working at this essentially 24-hour Starbucks to feed and or not feed but caffeinate all of the NBC people is bigger than some countries' delegations.
Like and, Jamaica.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or the Philippines, which only had one person, you know. So I think, I don't know, it's a little weird because of the way that it works. Like they have to hide that they have a Starbucks on site, but at the same time, I guess they don't have to hide it that badly because the news came out and they pretty much corroborated it. But their excuse is that because it's not open to the public, they're not subverting the McDonald's kind of regime or whatever. But, you know, they are, you know, advertising if they're giving away the cups with a logo on it. I don't know. I feel like if your coffee choices are McDonald's and Starbucks, you're in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, it's called Russia, Alex.
I mean, it's bad because there's this like exclusivity, and I just hate that in general. I mean, I really hate that about NBC's coverage of the Olympics, mostly because it's really awful. I mean, it's they don't show like everyone from the event. The commentary is amazingly annoying most of the time, and they just feel the need to have this kind of constant, like, bad noise commentary that goes on, and then dramatic, like, pronunciations of this or that, and puff pieces about, you know, this neighborhood that this person has come from or whatever. And it's just, like, show the sports. Show the sports. Or if you're going to, you know, be a commentator on it, be interesting. Like, did you see... there was a thing going around about BBC coverage of the snowboarding.
I did not see that.
I guess the BBC commentators just sound like guys who are just like full of Mountain Dew while they're commentating.
As it should be for snowboarding.
Yeah, right. I feel like that's pretty good. You know, they're like inventing slang as it's going, essentially. It's pretty nice. So look for that on the old internets if you can. I mean, I'm just amazed. I was talking with someone yesterday about how exclusive that NBC lock is. And I mean, it's total. Really, in the US, without resorting to you know, VPN and watching it on the internet, there's really no way. I mean, the NBC owns all of the coverage that's coming across and all of the channels that's coming across. I remember there was one year when there was a set of pay-per-view channels. It was like red, white, and blue were the channels. So you could always be seeing one event or the other, and they would show, you know, the event, you know, from start to finish. And as long as there were only three kind of simultaneously, you could see it on those channels. And as far as I know, there's nothing like that, at least in the U.S.
Well, they paid $775 million for the rights. It's almost $1 billion for the rights to this. So, I mean, from that perspective, I don't care if they get their own Starbucks. Like, you bought that right. You're spending almost $1 billion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know what the profit margins are would be about having, you know, McDonald's only on site there versus having some competition around it. I mean, it probably doesn't matter that much. I mean, it's only for like 2 weeks. 16 days of bad coffee. But I think the coverage could stand to use like some refining and work. At the same time, the ratings, as far as I know, are not really great this year. I read just around, I guess, the the mid-season premiere of The Walking Dead apparently beat the Olympics.
Ha!
So there's that.
That's right. People like to watch zombies more than they like to watch people doing things they've spent their whole lives trying to achieve. That's America for you. And it just seems like every day there's a new story coming out about something wrong with these Olympics. Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe Russia is tanking it on purpose so that Brazil doesn't feel so bad when they also tank it in 4 years. or whenever, 2 years, when the next summer. Yeah, the Summer Olympics. Because they're having the same kind of problems with corruption and stuff not being done. Yeah. And
misappropriation of countries' resources? Yep. Oh, well. Speaking of kind of misappropriation of the country's resources, there was kind of some what I consider like fixing of that misappropriation in the with the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and Washington for recreational use. There have been a lot more stories recently about just studies into marijuana, which I think is great. I think it's important to kind of figure stuff out about it and not just, you know, rush headlong into things. So, I mean, it took legalizing it to get some of these stories out. But there's an article this week about how it's much more difficult to kind of quantify the effect of marijuana on driving. And so one of the bigger kinds of things that are out is that there's not a direct correlation to, like, say, the amount of THC in someone's blood versus how impaired they are to drive. Whereas for alcohol, it's a lot clearer link. Like, if you have above 0.08, which is the legal limit, if you're, I forget what the stat was, if you're like 20 years of age, your likelihood of being in a fatal accident is just like immense. It's very huge. Like 0.07 to 0.08, like the difference statistically is very high. So they're saying that it's they're saying that it's a causal thing. It's not a correlation. Whereas for marijuana, I think part of it is that there's not as much statistics around it. And then part of it is just that it affects people much differently than alcohol does.
Yeah, I thought the interesting thing in that article was that they found a difference between someone who smokes infrequently and their impairment and someone who smokes on a regular basis and their impairment. So it actually, at least how I read the article, it seems like it's safer if you smoke more often to smoke and drive than if you were just never to have done it before and try and drive a car.
I'm not sure I would go so far to recommend people use that as a tactic.
I mean, as a role model, I'm not advocating that.
But that's certainly,
I find that interesting.
Oh, that's certainly part of it. I mean, there's something to be said about like how acclimated you can be to it. But also I feel like the way that it affects kind of judgment is a major factor of it. Like with alcohol, there is a tendency to for decision making to be very muddled in a way that goes towards, oh yeah, I can handle it. I can do that. Not a problem. Whereas I feel with marijuana, there is kind of a judgment muddling that occurs, but usually the direction it goes is like, nah.
Err on the side of caution.
Right. What I also thought was great about the article was that it pointed out that most people go to places to drink. And so the danger is when there is returning from those places and they might have to drive or whatever. Whereas most people don't go out to get high.
No, it's the opposite.
And especially in the two states where it's legal recreationally, you actually cannot smoke in public. It's I mean the way I understand it, police are kind of like not turning a blind eye to it exactly, but you know, they recognize that they have more kind of pressing matters,
which they do.
So that's it's. I think it's good. I think it deserves kind of more investigation and study because it does affect judgment to some degree. So you can't say that it doesn't affect like driving. I mean, driving, you have to be pretty, I think you should be pretty kind of active about driving. I mean, I think some people are not active enough. And those people are sober when they're driving. Like I've been in cars with people and people are just not attentive. And that's really maddening to me because I really enjoy driving. I really like all the aspects of trying to get the car to the place you want to go. So, to be inattentive or even like less attentive than that is annoying to me. So I can see, there must be some kind of study about how it affects, but then also, they have to have more of a way to kind of not diagnose, but quantify it. Because one of the other things is that like currently the only test for, THC in your system is, like a urine test. And that doesn't tell you like what your current state is. It tells you what the THC level was like 2 hours ago or something.
Well, it can be even up to days later or weeks later. You can still test positive.
Oh, sure.
Depending on your amount of consumption and how often you consume.
Right. Oh, that was the other thing, right? In a THC is more readily absorbed into your fat stores. It's fat soluble. That's why it's so great for cooking. You can kind of put it in butter and it sticks in that butter. Or so I've heard.
That's what the internet tells me.
Yes. but anyway, with alcohol, you know, it's much more obviously in your bloodstream and you can test that, you know, via breathalyzer or a blood test if it ended up being necessary. But the way that it kind of gets into your body and then works its way through for marijuana is different. And so, you know, some method for testing sobriety is probably better.
Well, I mean, if you can pass a field test for alcohol sobriety, it seems like they should be held to the same standard. Like if you can pass that test, you've passed the test. Continue on your way.
Sure. You're right. Because I mean, it is important for like reaction time and, you know, cognitive thought and being able to track like moving things. Yeah, that should be valid. I mean, one of the great points in the article near the very end is just like you would reduce fatalities more by just reducing the legal limit of alcohol. Right. So like currently it's 0.08. Like if you made it 1 point less, so it's 0.07 or whatever, that they can say, you know, very clearly statistically that would result in this many less injuries or fatalities due to drunk driving, whereas just kind of arbitrarily saying, you know, don't be high while you drive doesn't necessarily have a quantifiable effect, or it would be a lot less anyway. So yeah.
No, I think the field sobriety test is the way to go. Whether you have to develop a new one and, you know, additional testing to be added to that, different, mm-hmm. you know, things to have someone do. But I don't know. Just the fact that you've consumed something, if you're able to continue to act in a safe manner, that seems like that should be a good enough, you know. It's like that's the point of evidence. Like if you right. can't do this, whether they have evidence of, you know, urine test, blood test, whatever. You failed.
Yeah.
You passed.
Yeah, and I think that's really what the standard should be. The thing about that is, where is the accountability of, is that pass like valid? Because that's up to the cop at the time to decide, you know, did you pass or not? Whereas with alcohol, you can confirm that pass or not with a blood test, where with marijuana, you can't, at least not yet, until there's some way to quantify that. So I think there does need to be the kind of a more rigorous test that you can more clearly say pass fail, more to protect the people that are being tested, just I'm not saying that cops are bad or anything, but
no, I'll say that not all of them. But sometimes it seems like they forget that their job is to protect and serve and not to punish people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, your number one concern should be safety.
Right. Yeah, there's a really awful story about a cop who was a... It was police that were first responders to a 911 call of someone either choking or had otherwise, you know... was getting first aid from the person that called 911, and just because of the way the circumstances went, and I haven't read it, and they've locked everything down. Apparently that guy, the Good Samaritan in the case, was essentially beat up by police. I can link it. It was in San Francisco like this last weekend. It's kind of messed up.
Hmm.
There are protections on both sides of that. So I think it would be better to have kind of a quantifiable test. But I agree with you. You know, if you can pass the field sobriety test and can, you know, you should be able to at least drive home.
Right.
Because that's really all you want to do at that point.
Yeah. Get off the road.
Like if you were... if you were pulled over by a cop and they want to, you know, bust you for this, that's like the first reaction. It's like, I just want to go home. I'm not doing anything bad. I literally just want to go home.
If only we had the technology to assign a robot police officer to partner up with every real human police officer to monitor.
Oh,
almost human is still a thing.
It is. I may be three episodes back because of the Olympics watching that I've been doing recently and other things, but I'm excited to jump back into those. That's a great show.
I'm a little concerned that Fox is airing it out of order.
Yeah, that's usually kind of a bad
sign. That's not a good sign. But at least it's still good, and it's not throwing this... It kind of throws off the rhythm of the show a bit. It's like, wait, yeah. I thought we've moved past this point. But it's still good.
Yeah, and they're still airing it.
Right, that's the important part.
They haven't replaced it with reruns of... I don't even know what. American Dad.
That'd be a downgrade.
Well, kind of other stuff in the news this week. Also, kind of a downgrade to the tone of the show. Anyway, is this bit about extreme loneliness is being shown as a factor in kind of life expectancy. And the study that they had even put it higher than obesity's effect. So it's really surprising because, loneliness, or however that's defined, you would think is more of kind of a mental condition. But if it has that much of an effect on your kind of physical being, I find that more impressive. Whereas obesity has a lot more kind of direct effects on say, you know, your heart and your other organ health, et cetera, et cetera. An interesting study to come out anyway.
Well, the most interesting thing I thought in that was that as much of an effect as obesity or loneliness, at least in this study, had on life expectancy, they still were behind poverty as the thing that will shorten your life. Like, you can be fat, you can be lonely, but if you're poor, you're screwed.
It's probably true. It is just kind of one more thing on the way to a really awful quality of life. So yeah, try not to be poor and meet people.
Yeah, just make money and yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting the one of the angles that the article I don't think touched on is the kind of isolating effect that I think some internet users kind of experience. Like, it's very easy to kind of only look for approval in particular ways because of the way the internet works. You can just find all the approval you want, essentially, and you don't have to be kind of social with other people or out in public or anything like that. And I think that has intensified in recent years. So I think that might be a contributing factor to it being like the loneliness level being more prevalent or prevalent. There's the
Yep,
word
that's the one.
I'm
Well, I think there's also the trap of the internet and with online gaming, where you feel like you're accomplishing something. You're tricking your brain into thinking that you're actually doing things and achieving goals when you are in fact doing nothing.
You mean I'm not saving turn of the century New Orleans when I'm playing Assassin's Creed Liberation?
Nope. All those points that you add up, what does that really do for your life? And is that something to say, well, it raises my self-esteem. I've won something. It's like, who are you going to say that to? Like, you know what my score was on Candy Crush. No, that's just going to make you lonelier.
Yeah, there's a whole thing about and that's an interesting kind of piece of it too, is like social media has so much of a feedback loop of if you can talk about it, then you can get people to like approve you and like you and retweet you or whatever, and that gives you some measure of a feeling of accomplishment, whether it's true or not.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that I've been kind of pointed out to recently is that, like, if you want to do something, do it before you talk too much about it, because you get the same, or even I think you even get a better, more valid hit if you talk about it, whether you're doing it or not. It's like, well, I'm gonna do this, and people are like, oh yeah, that's really cool. It's very easy to say I'm going to do something and get approval versus actually doing that thing, because a lot of that is more of a actualization kind of thing versus a bragging kind of thing.
Yeah, that is a thing that happens.
So we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, we do it every week. We don't talk about it. Actually, I don't really talk about it that much.
Well, I guess we talk about it when we're in it.
Right.
I mean, that is what the podcast is. It's us talking.
It is, but we're doing something. We're not just talking about talking. We're actually talking.
Wow, that's way meta.
Whoa.
Well, something also kind of physical and in the real world in the last few weeks anyway, is in Canada. There's a pretty big, famous like quarry, I guess, where there was found some fossils, and then UNESCO went in and declared it kind of off limits for from any kind of further mining, and it has become this just huge repository of fossils from the Cambrian explosion, which is a kind of a period of time when there was just this extreme like multiplication of of fossils, which points to an extreme multiplication of species, and that kind of thing. And so there's a there like the relationship between predator and prey was being established in creatures and stuff. And there's just a lot of kind of fossil data and fossil record in the area. And apparently they found an even larger set in Canada. So go Canada. the really interesting thing about this field of fossils that they found is that the preservation levels are so high that they can actually see not just bones, but even organs or parts of organs. They found like a liver and what they think is a heart. I think it's really cool because it's a lot more about what the animal was, and you can do a lot more work around kind of evolutionarily tracing stuff from one thing to the other. I mean, bone structure will give you a significant portion of it, but if you can determine organ structure and stuff, that's going to be great.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Did you read the part in the article about I mean the predator prey stuff is really interesting because they would show, I guess they said that they found animals in essentially different generations of how their evolution were. And so it's like this one was before it evolved kind of a like crabs evolved kind of a harder shell, and this is one where the predatory animals had like the sharper thing that would cut through said harder shell. It's interesting to
Just like
see
the old Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd going back and forth with the
right,
bigger guns.
the escalation of bigger
Yeah,
guns,
yes.
which was just a metaphor for the Cold War between US and Russia,
Right. Which
right?
actually, during Sketchfest, I saw a sketch comedy group called Boat, where they had a sketch that was essentially that same premise, but it was with different ways of giving someone the middle finger. It was amazing.
Awesome.
They even used the same music.
That's cool. I really like creative ways of flipping the bird. That's fun.
They covered all of them. It was not a short sketch.
Excellent.
I can't demonstrate them because this is a podcast, but just take
All
my
the
word for
limitations of audio
it. Yes.
formats.
Unlike LeVar Burton, you do have to take my word for it.
Well, another thing that you don't have to take our word for it, it's in an article, is there was a biologist, specifically a bacteriologist, who had been studying bacteria or a specific strain of bacteria for like 26 years or something like that. Just this really long amount of time. It was his life's work, and he's retiring this year. And there was an article put out about how even in this amount of time, it's 26 years, it's something like 59,000 generations of this bacteria, and it has been enough that he can point to specific kind of evolutionary jumps in the bacteria, which is fascinating. I mean, you always think of evolution as over the period of thousands of years, if not even millions of years. I mean, when we were talking about dinosaurs, that whole thing, the Cambrian explosion is multiple millions of years. And to have the evolution that he's witnessing in 26 is pretty impressive. I mean,
I mean, the thing is, it's not the years that matter, it's the generations that have passed. And
right.
that's the cool thing about bacteria, and also the scary thing about bacteria, is how short that period is. They go, at least in this study, it was going through 500 generations in 75 days.
Yeah. I mean, granted, bacteria are tinier than,
Right.
say, like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
But even within the study, he saw that they were growing, and they were growing at a faster rate the larger they got.
Yeah, it's a really cool and scary article. It's one of those that if you read, a Michael Crichton novel, like right afterwards, you might be a little freaked out.
Yeah, stay away from the Andromeda Strain or Jurassic Park. You should read those books. They're good.
Yes.
But stay away from them after reading this article for a little while.
Yeah. Or what was the one that just came out? It didn't come out just. It was
Prey?
Probably,
I think Prey was his last one. But that was a while ago.
That one was good, but also in that kind of, yes, this is scary. Although that was more like nanotech kind of stuff.
Which you should be scared of also.
Yeah.
They're tiny robots. You can't even see them.
Yeah, that might even be scarier than regular robots. Although, I think it's easier to... Well, not easier. It's it feels more visceral to run away from the General Dynamics robot dog kind of chasing you,
right? Because they don't get tired. They don't have fatigue. They just keep coming, like machines. Oh wait, they are machines.
Yeah, machines. Not our favorite thing when it comes to, the extinction of the human race, shall we say. Well, the extinction of not necessarily the human race, but at least kind of major news sources is being kind of filled out by Facebook, supposedly. There was an article this week about... the Facebook effect on news. And when I saw that article, I thought it was talking about how Facebook is, or not Facebook specifically, but actually I was thinking more Reddit. When Reddit has a popular story and that gets picked up by kind of a major news outlet. I've seen that happen like a couple times recently, and I'm tickled by it because it's kind of like, this is what news has to do to stay relevant. But this is specifically around what kinds of things are treated as kind of important or newsworthy in Facebook. And so it described kind of a progression of things, like how Twitter is, how searches on Google are, and then what are the top stories in Facebook. And it determined like the things that are the top searches on Google tend to be kind of news related or mostly around people trying to find more detail about specific things that are picked up by kind of more major news outlets and our things. The things on Twitter are close, but then they might kind of stray into more like celebrity kinds of things or maybe just weird kind of meme kinds of things that are jokey but not necessarily like newsworthy.
Like Ryan Gosling won't eat his cereal.
Right. By the way, knowyourmeme.com is a thing. Please visit it. Learn whatever you need to, and just be up on stuff. You'll never ask someone at a cocktail party, what the hell is a doge?
Oh, there's a new thing that I'm trying to get started. I want people to stop using the term douchebag and start using the term dogecoin. Because if you use dogecoins and that stupid meme, you're a douchebag.
Oh, that's a thing.
That's my personal crusade.
Don't be a Dogecoin.
Don't be a Dogecoin.
Well, the interesting comparison between specific searches on Google, Twitter, and Facebook is a lot more just like junk. I don't know what the right term to use is. I mean, they said something like 3 of the 10 were kind of news-like things, and the rest of them are, you know, here's a picture of coffee, or there's a quiz about what state you belong in, which is all over right now. I don't think I've taken that one, actually.
I did. I got California.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I would turn out with California, so I'm nailed not even going to look. But it's things that aren't necessarily news-like, and I think it's funny that Facebook still kind of calls itself calls it a news feed, like, because those things, I mean, by really any definition, are not news.
No.
So I think that's really, really an odd kind of set. If you're using Facebook as your barometer for what people are doing, because I think, or at least I hope, people are not really shifting into Facebook as much as they used to, but I don't know. I have not seen the numbers about how those things go. I was really counting on Facebook to be kind of on its way out.
But we need the next thing. We haven't gotten the next thing yet.
That's true. I mean, I know that what is it? Snapchat turned down all the Facebook money that it possibly could have gotten, which is surprising considering that Snapchat, as far as I know, makes no money.
Yep.
So I don't know if they were just holding out for a bigger offer or what.
Well, they're holding out until they have all the photos they need, and then they start blackmailing people. That's what I think is going to happen.
That's a very likely explanation. did you see the thing about Facebook's new app? They had an app called Paper that came out a couple, maybe 2 weeks ago.
No.
It's also kind of being bandied about as the new way to see Facebook. That's kind of more news magazine-y. So they're going for a kind of flipbook or pulse kind of representation of the stories. So it's kind of browsable, and you'll just see like one post per screen, and instead of that kind of scroll, like continuous ribbon scroll that you would get from current Facebook, it's more like, you know, this is a page, and then I flip the page and I get kind of the next story. And it's supposed to be more curated, I guess. So I don't know if who is picking these stories or if it's just an algorithm. It probably is of what counts as news for you. But you get some mix of things that people are posting, and then some mix of stuff that's, you know, from the internet at large. And I'm sure it's more weighted, so it's being done so sponsored posts will come up and look just like, you know, things that people are posting, which is probably what they want. But I haven't looked at it. Mainly because I don't need another app on my phone to see Facebook.
No. Two is enough.
And you have two?
Well, I've got the Facebook app and then the Messenger app.
Yeah, I'm noticing that as a trend too, that you have more than one app from a single service. So like Google Plus has, or Google, right? Google has a Google Mail app, a Google Voice app, a Google Plus app, a Hangouts app, which used to be part of the Google Plus thing and now is its own kind of thing, is Google Maps app. I mean, not to harp on Google, but
since we're using their service currently, I was gonna say Google Plus was supposed to be the next thing, but that failed.
Oh no! No.
But other than the fact that it allows us to record our podcast every week,
well, it's not even Google Plus. Technically, we're using Hangouts.
Right, now that it is separate.
Yeah, so having that kind of app separation I mean, it just means there are more apps on every phone, which I guess is just competing for your phone's like real estate of apps, which I guess is another metric of how to do it, right? I mean, if you have some part of Google on your phone, you have Google on your phone. So by diversifying it into multiple things, it's more likely that it'll be on more phones.
Yeah,
it's
as many avenues as possible for the NSA to get on your phone.
That unfortunately is still a thing. But you know, we love you guys, NSA.
No, we don't. Boo them. Right. I mean, yeah. I
bunch
would
of
be
Doge as coins, much as those guys.
Yeah, bunch of Doge coins. I mean, if honestly, as much as I love doing the podcast every week, I would be very proud if we got shut down by the NSA. So I'm not going to do something stupid like threaten the president. That's not something I want to do. I don't want to go to jail. But
well, that wouldn't be the NSA. That would be the
Secret Service. Right. But they would have found out about it through the NSA.
Okay. Maybe. Well, if the NSA's listening, hey.
Go take another coffee break. Don't worry about it. Don't work so hard, guys and gals.
Cool. We've squandered, you know, a sufficient amount of time, I think, to discuss the things and not things this week. I think we're going to record on time next week or not.
It either will be a thing or it will not be a thing.
Right. Scheduling is still a thing, but you know, exact scheduling is we're not that into. But we're committing to make it. We're going to have an episode next week for sure, so stay tuned. If you want to be a guest, let us know. There've been some kind of guest I'm not going to say people bailing on the show, but definitely some kind of indefinite postponements, shall we say. So we're hoping that those folks come back or new folks come on. So if you are even partway interested on getting in on this new media train, let us know.
We have slots available and you can fill our slots.
Just email Hal at notathingpodcast.com or comment on our show or on Twitter, Facebook, not Google Plus. We don't post on Google Plus.
And I also forgot the password. Password security is a thing.
It's that secure.
Yeah. It's so secure, I don't even have access to it.
It's all right. I remember the password. It's okay.
Okay, good. As long as one of us remembers and it's not just left up to Hal, we'll be fine.
Cool. Well, I will talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.